All right. Well, welcome everyone to the LTD Board of Directors regular meeting. I now call the meeting to order. I'm going to start with roll call. Juno Grimaldi.
Here.
Thank you. Pete Knox.
Here.
Susan Cox.
Here.
Michelle Weber.
Here.
And Don Nordic.
Here.
All right. We're all here. Thank you so much for being here this evening. We've got some great folks in the audience. Happy to see you. Thanks for taking time out of your day to attend the meeting. And thank you to all of our attendees online as well. We look forward to a fun meeting this evening. So I'm going to just go ahead and start off with comments from the board president. Now that I've profusely thanked you all for being here, I also want to share some pretty good news. So LTD, as we all know, likes to get recognized nationally for our work. And something very exciting happened. And I want to just congratulate the marketing team. Who's here from marketing right now? Oh, okay. So Pat, so please share our appreciation to your team, Pat. But they announced a video, or excuse me, today was announced that the video that they produced entitled Breaking News, LTD Blue Buses Are Really Green, actually won second place in the Zero Emissions Bus Resource Alliance video contest. Good job, marketing. And I know that the link was sent out earlier. I'm not sure if everyone had a chance to watch it. So in just a moment, we will get that opportunity. But if you haven't watched it, I just wanna talk a little bit about the video. It's actually similar to like a television newscast, but it has youth reporters and they interview LTD team members to report about the district's sustainability commitment. There's some additional great B-roll footage in there. And then actually the marketing team worked with Terrell Group to develop the creative concept. And that includes scripting the video, shooting the video. And in addition to the youth actors, many of the children you see and hear in the video are those of our LTD employees. So once again, great job marketing team, great job LTD employees and staff. And without further ado, here's that video.
Coming. Sorry, I have to rotate all over my screen.
That's fine. This is no problem. Does anyone know any funny jokes while we wait?
Sorry, Caitlin, I have no sense of humor.
Disagree. Okay, here we go.
The boss is best friend with another one, which is pretty cool.
Oh,
the Phoenix bus is green to help protect our planet.
Oh, why is this bus is blue?
I know it looks blue, but it's actually green.
But you just said...
I'll take it from here. In 2020, LTD adopted its first climate action plan. That means they took a good hard look at their footprint.
This kind of footprint?
No, their carbon footprint.
Ah, carbon footprint. Got it.
Like I was saying, LTD made a plan to create a cleaner running fleet of buses to reduce pollution and help protect the earth. Let's get the scoop from Interim General Manager Mark Johnson.
Improving public transportation is part of the solution to climate change. As a transit district, we're always looking at ways to use our resources efficiently and be responsible. We developed our climate action policy with three goals in mind. The first is to replace 30 of our aging fossil fuel and hybrid buses with battery electric buses by 2023. The second is to eliminate fossil fuel vehicles from our fleet by 2035 and reduce greenhouse gas emissions by 75% by the year 2020. Our third goal is to explore emerging technologies and fuels, evaluate our progress each year, and work with our community partners to reduce emissions on
them. How does this all fit into LTD's sustainability plan? By the way,
What is the sustainability plan?
That's a great question. LTD's sustainability plan encompasses all we do. We look at waste in every area of our business, and we make sure that we're paying attention to how we use resources. And in the fleet area, biggest resource is fuel. So we always are looking for ways to be more efficient in our fuel usage.
I think there's a lot of work that goes into making a bus fleet clean. You need special equipment and top-notch mechanics.
When you go out to the bus lot, you'll now see islands where the charging infrastructure is there to allow for the power to get delivered into the electric bus. So a big transition in maintaining electric buses is a heightened safety awareness for our team. So our team is equipped with high voltage gear, cool helmets that you'll see to ensure that they're safe while they're working on those high voltage lines, maintaining an electric bus.
The big question on Vios on and Ellens, are you seeing any improvements in meeting your goals?
Yeah, we are. LTD has cut its greenhouse gas emissions by 77% since 2018, in large part to our transition to a 99% renewable, as well as the introduction of our battery powered electric buses. We currently have 11 in service and will soon be up to 30, which ends up being 30% of our fleet.
Now that's pretty cool.
So, Mark, can I call you Mark?
Of course you can.
Okay, Mark, let's be friends.
If it's said his name is Mark,
LTD has a strong goal. And you're doing a lot of good work. What is the triple bottom line, Jesus?
Well, Sarge, the triple bottom line is that LTD is not only committed to the daily business of providing public transportation in our community, but we're also committed to what's good for people and for our planet.
So, by making good sustainable changes now, you're helping to serve for years to come.
The community also protecting our future. And the future becomes just like that.
Yeah, we're working really hard on that.
The climate crisis is real. Any part that LTD can do to improve the environment is important to us. So it is an exciting time. Looking at new technology, having new buses, all of those will play a part in the future.
So when Mark has his big break in Hollywood, we'll know where he started.
I think that should have sailed.
Congratulations on getting second place at the video. It was first place in my heart. I love it. I think it's so great. And I think you guys did a great job. So with that, let's go to comments from the general manager and Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, just a couple of things. October 11th and October 13th, Tiffany will be sending out a kind of save the date reminders. So we'll be having, there's two DeFazio recognition events. One the city is putting on and most of us will be at APTA. And then the other one will be at the Springfield Station, which we'll be hosting. So she'll send out details on that tomorrow, as much as we know right now, but it'll be more of a save the date. So. And then also, Don brought up that a longtime board member, Gary Gillespie, passed away recently. And he's served on our board for several years, was a great friend of labor and a friend of transit. So we'll miss him. So that's all I got.
Okay, thanks, Mark. All right, are there any announcements from board members? Okay. And at this time, there are no additions to the agenda. So we're going to go ahead and move on to Employee of the Month. And I'd like to ask Tom to please step up. And the mic is yours.
So thank you. It's my pleasure tonight to introduce Brett Smith as this month's Employee of the Month. But first, I want to say that we have an awesome group of planners that work on getting the service in shape to actually operate. And that team includes Brett and Heather Lindsay, and Jeremy Card kind of has a foot in both development planning and service planning. But I want to say they get their awesomeness from all having been drivers before, and they know kind of what it takes to put the service on the road. So I just want to do a shout out to the planners. As I said in my AIS, in my experience, every so often there's challenges that we face where when the dust clears, there's obviously one person that was meant to handle that challenge. And in this case, with respect to developing an airport service from scratch, Brett was the one that when the dust cleared, there he was making it happen. And I mean, it was a fantastic success. We had not done anything like that quite before. Created a lot of challenges for other parts of the organization, trying to hire people and train and get it all out. But through it all, Brett was there night and day, and made sure that things worked out. And so, Brett, do you want to come up here? And
few words, just a few. I want to say thank you. It's an honor, but honestly, it was truly a team effort. I might have been involved in the very beginnings, and it was a moving target. There's no question about that. All the way up to like almost 2 weeks right before we needed to have something. We really didn't have a plan totally and completely. So it would not have happened if it hadn't been for the LTD team as a whole, though. I might have created what we needed to do, but HR performed miracles by hiring temp employees at record rate. I don't even know how you guys did it, to be honest with you. Marketing, you guys, I don't even know how you put it on the road with only, you know, all the marketing to all the different hotels and different places, fleet trying to get things clean and ready to go. Our facilities team getting stops out, temporary stops out at the last minute, you know, and then ultimately operations figuring out how to even make it work. You know, it's one thing to create it; it's another thing to actually put it on the road. So it was a team effort by everybody. So, but thank you.
Well, and thank you, and we will have a nice certificate and other things that go along with being employee of the month.
In the near future. Yes, you're correct. Yes, yes. Brett, you'll get a nice certificate that signifies you being employee of the month. You'll get a gift certificate and then our undying appreciation, because that was awesome that you got that accomplished. We just really appreciate everything that you did. Thank you for being here this evening. All right, Camille, I'm going to actually turn it over to you for audience participation.
Giving it a moment here to see if anyone, excuse me, indicates that they would like to speak. And I am not showing anyone at this time.
Okay.
Nobody's signed up.
There, we've got one.
Okay, great.
We've got one.
Yeah, you need to. Yeah, thanks. You can do your virtual one first if you'd like.
Hi, Camille. This is John Q. Can you hear me?
We have John Murray. John, whenever you're ready, go right ahead.
Thank you, Camille. John Quetzalcoatl-Murray for Whole Community News. I just wanted to say congratulations to Pat Walsh and the marketing team and the Terrell Group. What a great movie. That was really fun to watch. I hope there are many more coming. And Brett Smith also.
Pause 1 second. We're having some audio difficulties. Just hold on 1 second, please.
Okay.
I don't actually have anything else on my end that I can do for his volume.
Oh, it's on his end?
I believe okay. Maybe.
John, we're having trouble hearing you. Is there anything you can do so we could maybe hear you a little better?
Yeah, let me try a different microphone. How's this?
That's good. Okay, thank you.
Oh, okay, I'll start all over. For the record, this is John Quetzalcoatl Murray for Whole Community News. Congratulations to Pat Walsh and the marketing team and the Terrell Group on the award. The video was really fun to watch, and I hope there are a lot more in the future. And many congratulations to Brett Smith and all the awesome planners. Brett mentioned Heather and Jeremy, I believe, and the fact that they're former drivers, that's fantastic. I have a question. I'm not sure if this is the right time for people to address it, but I want to put it out there because I think it's important to address. Better Eugene Springfield Transportation put out a report this week, which says that Governor Brown had little to no interaction with the community or the three new appointees to the LTD board. It states, quote, Best has spoken with and supports the recent nominees, Heather Murphy replacing Don Norton, Kelly Sutherland replacing Emily Secord, and Lawrence Green replacing our president. Nonetheless, Best is disappointed in Governor Kate Brown's selection process. Not only did her staff not consult with local community leaders, but we also understand that her staff barely communicated with the nominees themselves. So we hope to ask each of the board members to indicate their experience in the selection process. Thank you.
Thank you, John. And although we don't reply to public comment, Pat Walsh will be following up with you. And welcome.
And Caitlin, I will go ahead and hand it back to you. I don't have anyone else.
Anybody
they would like
to speak. Okay. If you want to just set the timer for John Gangle. John, so go ahead and just repeat what you see on the sheet, what your city of residence is, who you're representing, and then go ahead for your 3 minutes.
John Gangle, representing ATU 757, and I live in the city of Eugene. So I do represent all the unionized workers here at LTD, and I am here to discuss the COVID policy as it currently stands right now. As everyone's well aware, bus operators have worked through the entire pandemic. We've been face-to-face with the public. There's been many exposures, there's been hospitalizations, even lost an HR director to the COVID illness. It's been rough on our workforce over the last 2 years. Currently, the COVID policy is if you are symptomatic, get tested. If you test positive, stay home. With our high interaction with the public, it's easy to imagine we have several operators who have become ill with COVID multiple times. And where that leaves us is now people follow a policy and they get disciplined for attendance. We have several operators on verbal warnings for attendance for following the COVID policy. And if they choose not to follow COVID policy in quarantine, then they're violating another policy. It shows there's definitely a lack of compassion there that's contributing to pretty low employee morale. People are feeling that they are caught in a catch-22. Pick what you're going to get disciplined for. So I was asked to come here today by my work, by the people I represent to speak to that. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and close audience participation and move on to board member reports. Looking at the board members with the committee meetings we had over the past month, what do you want to update us? Please, Pete, go ahead.
The strategic planning committee met last month, and we're going to have another meeting this coming Tuesday. Really is looking at continuing the process of looking at what the future of the strategic planning committee is going to be. as well as some things, thoughts about possibly consolidating the SPC and the Comprehensive and Accessible Transportation Committee. But that's an early discussion, and I'm sure they'll have to come to the board at some point.
So Don and I are part of MPC, and then just so this board knows, we had a special meeting this month. The City of Eugene is applying for a grant. If you remember when Rob Interfield spoke at our work session about the Safe Streets grant, and this would actually be for River Road, and so these are enhanced safety safety measures for pedestrians. So street lights and some other stuff like that. And so that was City of Eugene's grant. And what they did is they asked MPC body for a letter of support, and that was passed unanimously. And so Don and I were both able to attend that. And then we found out during that process that the county is also applying for that grant as well. And do you remember what their application was for? What project they're doing for Safe Streets?
Well, they had a... They were being careful about the application so that it didn't conflict with that. So the application to the FTA would not look at the same jurisdiction requesting funds for the same operation. So they were differentiating that. But one of the key things there for LTD was that the operation or the grant for the Safe Streets program would also qualify for matching funds for our applications in the future for whatever we do on River Road. It could be the MX or frequent transit service in some way. So that was a useful bit of information. And the Lane Act also addressed the issue of the Safe Streets. And basically, they approved the same protocol in order, but in such a way so that it didn't conflict with the application from the City of Eugene. So the county would have another way of funding it, but not from the same funding source. Lane Act also had a big presentation from ODOT about freight transit in the whole state, which is a pretty heavy, a lot of information there, but it's all on the website.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Don. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to consent calendar. What discussion do we have about the items that are looking to be approved? If there's no discussion, I'll understand the motion, but feel free to ask if needed.
I move adoption of LTD resolution number 2022-09-21-048 is hereby resolved that the consent calendar for September 21, 2022 is approved as presented.
Second.
Thank you. All right, roll call vote. Don, let's go ahead and start with you, please.
Aye.
Thank you, Michelle.
Yes.
Susan.
Aye.
Peter.
Aye.
Gina.
Yes.
And I vote aye, so that passes unanimously. All right, let's go ahead and move on to our first staff presentation. And so we're going to be looking at the FY 2021-2022 audit plan. Christina is not here, so I'm assuming we'll see her virtually. Okay. And Ross Adams.
So good evening. At the end of each fiscal year, an external audit is performed. And the purpose of these audits is to give the board, grantors, and the public confidence that there is independent oversight of the district's financial reporting and internal controls. The auditors present their audit plan in the fall and complete their audit in December. They return to present the results of that audit in January or February. Our external auditors are from the accounting firm Moss Adams, and two members from their team, Ashley Austin, who is the engagement partner, and Kelly Jones, who is the senior manager, are here tonight to present their audit plan for our fiscal year that ended on June 30, 2022.
Thank you, Christina. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen just so we can walk through a presentation, but please feel free to stop us at any time. Maybe a verbal, can you see that screen?
We yes. can.
Perfect. Okay. So this is just a thank you for your continued engagement at Moss Adams. We're excited to be partnering with Lane Transit District again for the year ending June 30, 2022. And we're here tonight, as Christina mentioned, to talk to you a little bit about our plan and then also some current year accounting and auditing standard changes that you should be aware of. As it says on the bottom of this slide, we do welcome any questions that you have, so please feel free to stop us at any time. So this is your dedicated team. I will be, again, in the engagement reviewer role, so I sign your audit opinion. Olga Darlington is a partner out of our Everett office, and she serves as the concurring reviewer. She's picks up your financial statements, is a cold reviewer, doesn't have any relationship to you as the client, looks at a few things in our files just to make sure that everything meets all of the technical requirements. And then Kelly's here tonight as the senior manager. She does all the work and I just get to take credit for it. I'm really actually joking, but she does do a lot of the work for sure. So tonight we're here to talk a little bit about our responsibility under generally accepted auditing standards and then the plan, scope, and timing of the audit in January or February when we're back to talk a little bit about the results of the audit. We'll talk about all the other items on this slide, if we had any significant audit findings, any difficulties encountered in performing our audit, et cetera. So our responsibilities under our professional standards are really just to assess if those financial statements that management prepares are presented fairly in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. Of course, our audit doesn't relieve you or management of your responsibilities. We do perform an audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards and then government auditing standards because you do receive and spend federal funding. We do design the audit to obtain reasonable, not absolute assurance. So we don't audit every single transaction. We don't audit every single dollar. And then we also consider internal controls, but that's really more as a basis for designing our audit procedures. We don't issue an opinion on internal controls. And then we do communicate findings that in our professional judgment are relevant to your oversight in the financial reporting process and just your oversight responsibility. We have quite a few deliverables that we plan to provide as a result of our audit process. So the first is just that report on the financial statements. That is the first bullet point on this slide. We'll also issue two additional reports because of the spend of federal funding above $750,000 that requires a separate audit. We call it the single audit. The first is really just a report on internal control over financial reporting and on compliance in accordance with government auditing standards. The third bullet is the report of independent auditors on that specific major program that we select and test. In the past, it's been the Federal Transit Cluster. So most of the times, we only audit one program. There are several years where we've had to audit two. It really depends on lots of different things at play there, whether we've audited previously, if there's increased risk, if the government has indicated that there's increased risk, lots of different things that can impact the number of programs that we audit. We'll also provide a schedule of findings and question costs, which just lays out which programs we tested, whether or not there were any findings. And then we will also include a report on our comments related to Oregon minimum standards. As an Oregon Municipal Corporation, you are required to comply with specific requirements. And so we will test those as part of our audit procedures and issue an opinion on those as well. Communications to those charged with governance, that's the letter that we often issue at the end of the audit. It describes all of our various required communications to those charged with governance, which is the board, and then a management letter, which details any best practice recommendations that we identify throughout the audit that we believe warrant to be in writing so that those charged with governance are aware of those items. And then we also have two additional reports on where we apply agreed upon procedures for the NTD reporting that we perform, and that is due by October 31st. And then the STIF reporting, the State Transportation Improvement Fund, we perform those procedures in January. I'm going to hand it over to Kelly to walk through the next few slides.
Thanks, Ashley. I'm going to start by talking a little bit about our audit process. The audit process consists of testing material account balances, and we do this through a combination of control and substantive procedures. So listed here are internal controls, analytical procedures, and substantive procedures. So we'll use a combination of those testing to audit the material account balances. For internal controls, that includes walkthroughs and testing of key controls over significant accounting cycles. We also do a consideration of how IT plays into that. Analytical procedure consists of looking at trends, comparisons, outside data, and setting expectations for account balances and comparing those results to actuals. And then substantive procedures consist of things such as confirming account balances with third parties, vouching out to supporting documentation such as invoices. We oftentimes will send out representations to legal, and then again, just doing other procedures as deemed necessary based on the account balances. We do this based on our consideration of materiality. So the next slide here, we talk a little bit about what materiality is. This is really the amount of a misstatement that could influence the economic decisions of the users of the financial statements. We arrive at materiality after considering both quantitative and qualitative factors. And then we use materiality throughout the audit. It helps us identify any significant risk areas, the nature, timing, extent, and scope of the audit work we do, as well as any findings or misstatements that we come across as we perform our audit. The materiality helps us identify those significant. Oh, go ahead and go to the next slide, Ashley. We use materiality to identify these significant audit areas, which I've listed here below. This includes revenue recognition and the valuation of receivables. So those are both very, very big items for the district. The existence and valuation of capital assets, the financial close and reporting process that builds up into the financial statements, the pension and OPEB liability, and then also compliance with laws and federal regulations and the OMS that Ashley was previously talking about. Next slide, please. In addition to our consideration of those account balances, we also consider the risk of fraud. So as auditors, we need to consider whether there are fraud-related risks that could create a material misstatement to the financial statements. And we do several things to consider the risk of fraud through the audit. On the front end, we do a brainstorm with our team to identify any areas. We also conduct interviews of various personnel at the district. We consider internal controls. And then we also look for any unusual or unexpected account balances or transactions during the year. And then to actually address those risks, we'll look at journal entries, especially general journal entries or non-standard entries. We consider the accounting policies and estimates used by management. And then again, if there's any unusual transactions, we'll take a closer look at those. And then on this next slide, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the audit timing. Christina alluded to this a bit before, but we started out in August doing the pension testing for the district and have gone through that testing. And then we're here today meeting with the board. In October, we'll be doing the NTD agreed upon procedure. And then at the end of October and into November, that's when we plan to do our final fieldwork procedures, which includes that control and substantive testing, as well as the single audit. And then our goal is by the end of November to have the draft financial statements and auditor reports discussed with management and to begin finalizing those reports. and then presenting to the board the results of the audit in January of 2023. And then the other agreed upon procedure that we'll perform for STIF is scheduled for January of 2023. And with that, I'll pass it back to Ashley.
All right, thanks, Kelly. So just a few accounting and auditing developments for the board and management to be aware of. But please know that we do talk to management about these items throughout the year. A couple of bigger standards are coming online in 2022 and 2023 that we have been actively talking to them about. So this is more of an overview. It's not supposed to get into all of those details. The first slide here has a lot of words on it, so I almost want to skip to the next slide, but these are changes in our auditor reporting standards. So the AICPA issued a series of standards that change the look and the feel of the audit opinion. And I like this slide much better. The new report layout is on the left and the current report layout is on the right. So in the new report layout, it really takes the opinion, which used to be at the bottom of the bottom of the report, up to the top and puts it square. So square in the face of a user of the financial statements so that they know what the opinion is of the auditor. It also includes changes of geography of where things were disclosed in the old opinion, but it also adds some emphasis of matter if that's warranted. And then it also talks about responsibilities of management for the financial statements, just clarifying that management is responsible for those financial statements. And then it clarifies what auditor's responsibilities for the audit of the financial statements is as well. No significant impact to the district. Just wanted you to know that if you were to compare last year's report to this year's report, you will notice that they are a little bit different. Couple of new standards to be adopted in 2022. The most significant one is GASB 87 leases, which is similar to the FASB that is now coming online starting in December 31st, 2022. However, it's just bringing all of those operating leases that you used to account for as a financing lease, and it brings it onto the balance sheet or onto the statement of net position as a asset and corresponding liability. Or if you're the lessee, then receivable and deferred inflow resources. It just is providing more transparency about those outstanding commitments that the district owes or is owed. And we've been talking to management about this. It's a pretty significant standard for a lot of different governmental entities. It seems to be really impactful to most governmental organizations. There have been a few that have early adopted the standard though, so there's lots of good example disclosures for management to take a look at. And then of course, we also can weigh in on those disclosures as well. GASB 89 won't impact the district because the district doesn't have any debt, but it does eliminate the ability to capitalize interest when you are capitalizing an equipment or building or something where you're using debt to do so. GASB 92, that addresses a variety of topics. GASB always issues an omnibus every single year to clarify certain standards. They usually don't have a significant impact on governmental entities, but just wanted to lay it out here just so that you're aware. On the next slide, GASB 93, this really impacts those governmental organizations that use LIBOR to generally in a derivative instrument. I'm not aware of any of those particular transactions happening at the district, but if that was happening, there are some specific steps to transition from LIBOR, which is sunsetting effective June 30, 2023. It's no longer going to be published. It's already ceased in existence, but it's no longer going to be published effective June 30, 2023. There are some steps to transition from the LIBOR rate to the secured overnight financing rate or the SOFR rate. I don't think that's going to have a significant impact on the district. GASB 97, that amends the criteria for fiduciary component units specific to 457 deferred compensation plans. I don't think it's going to have a significant impact on the district, but we'll evaluate that with management as well during the audit. In 2023, there's also a few significant standards. GASB 91, conduit debt obligations. This is really related to governmental entities that issue debt on behalf of someone else. The district hasn't done that historically, so I don't think this will be a significant impact to the district in 2023. GASB 94 is really getting around financial reporting around public and public-private partnership arrangements and how those accounted for. I assume that this might have an impact depending on specific agreements that the district may enter into over the course of the next year or two, depending on their current plans. So we would need to evaluate the significance of the standard with management as that kind of comes online in 2023, but something to be aware of. GASB 96 is a lot like GASB 87, except it applies to IT software, bringing those on the balance sheet or the statement of net position as well. So we already know that the district is adopting a new software system, but that will be that will impact 2023. So this standard will have an impact on the district in the year ending June 30, 2023. And then again, an omnibus for 2022, effective for 2023 year end, but not expected to have a significant impact. We do have quite a few resources on our website in the case that you are looking for a free CPE. If you have someone that you know that is trying to maintain their CPA license, we offer a lot of webcasts that offer free CPE reports and guides, articles and alerts. And then here's our contact information in the case that you don't have, that you have a question that you don't feel comfortable asking here today, you can always reach out to us. And if you have any input or feedback on our audit process or things that we should be looking at as auditors specific to the financial reporting process, then please feel free to reach out to us. So at this point, thank you for your time, and I'm going to stop sharing and see if there are any questions.
Thank you, Ashley and Kelly. Board members, are there any questions for Ashley or Kelly or Christina? All right. People are shaking their heads no, Ashley, but thank you so much for such a robust report and for trying to make it digestible. We don't always speak accounting language, so thank you for spelling things out for us. We greatly appreciate it. And thank you for your work with LTD.
Thank you again. Have a great meeting.
Okay. We're going to go ahead and move on to our next agenda item. And I'm actually going to ask Joe McCormick to come up and kick us off.
Sure.
You can go to the front where the microphone is.
Yeah. And this item, I would typically go to the contract committee, but we didn't have a quorum at the last one. So we brought it directly to the board to keep it moving.
Okay, actually, I'm going to pass it off to Sarah and Todd, who have done that presentation with the contract committee. And Todd is not here today, so they've recorded the presentation.
Okay.
So we'll go ahead and let him do that presentation.
Okay.
And Sarah online and myself can answer questions if there are.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
I'm Todd Smith. Working on the operation command center. Randy Sodier, the leadership. This team is also part of the chairman office and leadership of Sarah Frank's agenda. Today, I'm excited to bring to you a recommendation to approve and execute a contract to construct, to provide construction manager general contract for the CC project. 3 years. As a reminder, here's a review of events on the OCC project and the CMGC process. In December of 2022, early planning work started, including analysis and development findings on the best suited project delivery method for the Operation Command Center project and the Eugene Station Modernization project. At the March board work session, Sarah Brightman and I presented an overview and the process for public agencies to utilize this alternative contracting method. At the April board meeting, the team presented the findings supporting the use of this alternative contracting method, and the board adopted the findings, passing a resolution that approves the use of the CMGC method for two projects, the Operation Command Center project and the Eugene Station Modernization Project. Today, we're only addressing the Operation Command Center project, and next month, we're scheduled to recommend a similar contract for the Eugene Station Modernization Project. So in July, the contract committee and board approved a contract for architectural and engineering services for the operations command center. And now here we are today, bringing forward this contract recommendation. So here's a brief review of the CMGC benefits to the project. The CMGC process of early involvement in projects from the design phase through the final completion of construction allows the CMGC to have specific understanding of the project and its complexities, its technical and logistical challenges, the operational impacts of an occupied remodel, the neighborhood impacts, the schedule impacts, the supply chain issues, and labor resource impacts, especially in today's current construction market. The process of early involvement and completion sets the stage for a team approach, fostering collaboration and innovation for successful project outcomes. So in this contract, Fortis Construction will perform the CMGC services of all these standard pre-construction and construction services in connection with the Operation Command Center project, including collaboration with both the district and Pivot Architecture. Fortis shall regularly coordinate with the district and Pivot Architecture during the pre-construction on the review and analysis and incorporation of cost estimating, scheduling, constructability reviews, value engineering, phasing and sequencing, and bidding. Fortis will provide cost estimates at each design phase milestone of the project, schematic design, design development, and construction documents. And they shall recommend reconcile estimates with a third-party independent cost estimator. They will work with the district and PIV to identify a cost path to the district's approved budget at each of these milestones. Fortis will plan and work on a civil community subcontractor engagement events prior to the solicitation of any bid documents. After the bid results are substantiated, they will develop and negotiate with the district and GMP based on the solicitation results. Fortis will phase and sequence the construction of the project in a safe manner in cooperation with the district to minimize impacts to noise, odor, dust, and traffic in and around the existing building. Procurement develop a request for proposal solicitation for LTD facilities to obtain technical proposals from interested CMGC firms. Posting for approximately 66 weeks, the RFP resulted in the receipt of two proposals from the following: Fortis Construction and GBC Construction. The evaluation committee comprised of LTD staff reviewed and scored the proposals. Upon review of the scores, the top ranked CMGCs for the OCC project were invited to present further and interview with their proposed teams. The evaluation committee proceeded with the presentation interviews, confirming the ranking set forth by the first round of evaluations. The most responsible, responsive, and highest scored vendor recommended for award on the Operation Command Center project is Fortis Construction. Additionally, in Fortis's proposal response, they identified an overall target of 6.7% for a disadvantaged business enterprise. The contract value for the pre-construction services of the OCC project is $65,000. And the targeted GMP is $8.2 million. The recommended contract value is $8,265,000 over the next 3 years. This project is funded from a federal grant with a local match. And with the strategic business plan, the contract and its associated project work of the contract is in alignment with all of the areas of the strategic focus: the community value, the customer satisfaction, employee engagement, financial health, and sustainability. So the alternatives to this contract, not approving this contract, would be to deny the approval of a new contract and request that the team resolicit this work And that would result in delaying pre-construction services during the design. This may result in a delay of the critical path input from the contractor and potentially incur additional costs. The second option would be to deny this new contract and request team renegotiate further with the selected firm for the pre-construction fee. This may result in a delay to the project schedule and potential cost implications. So now the time for questions. Joe McCormick, Randy, and Sarah are all here to assist with any questions. And I want to thank you for your time.
You would have not told us that was recorded. I would have been like, that's, I would have talked right at him. He did such a great job.
So any questions?
I'm a light. There we go.
Yeah. And does everyone know Randy? Will you introduce yourself really quick since not done this in person in many years?
Todd's leading this project, but I'm working on other projects and providing support.
And you've all met Todd. You've seen him before. Yeah. Don?
Yeah, I've had this question before and answered, but I still don't know how to direct it. We've looked at this facility and I see, well, here are all these bus shelters and stuff. And why couldn't we put solar panels on top of those? And of course, okay, that doesn't fit in the budget. And it would have to come from another source of direction. And it seemed to be, okay, the directors have to do it, but then we have to be presented with a proposal in some way in order to interact with that. It still seems like a lost opportunity to increase the resilience of our community to add that rooftop area that could be used to collect energy that could, you know, wouldn't run the buses, but it could keep the facilities running in the case of an earthquake that caused everything to break down. We have something happening there.
Yeah,
I just don't.
Fair question. I'm worried about the bridges, but So with regard to, you mentioned bus shelters, I'll just kind of mention there's about a fifth of our bus shelters actually right now have solar panels on them for lighting
and a little bit. Yeah.
And so I will say the project that Todd's talking about here, it will have a energy producing component to it. Most likely, it will be solar. That is intended to be part of that project, is that we will have solar panels on it. And that's, you know, I think that's the right thing to do. And there's a mandate from the state as well for new municipal buildings. And in fact, the facility building built back in 1718 also has solar panels on it. So we are gradually doing it to answer your question. Yeah.
Just pushing.
The best possible answer you could have given.
We are doing it. We're going to do more of it. Powering the buses. Yeah. That's a whole nother.
Somebody study. Sets up a facility out in Christmas Valley or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Kelly Hale a few years back presented what that would look like if we wanted to produce that kind of electricity. And it's a large investment for powering buses.
Well, I guess the suggestion I've had about this is not that it comes out of our budget, but that we just make that space available for some other development person to invest in it. But it would be something that could be developed by another entity.
Right. There's some different scenarios out there. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Other questions about the contract? There's no questions. There is a proposed motion.
It is here. Oh, start at the top here. I move adoption of LTD resolution number 2022-09-21-052, It is hereby resolved that the LTD Board of Directors, acting as the LTD Contract Review Board, approves contract number 2022-25 as presented.
I'll second. Thank you. All right, let's go and do a roll call vote. Start with Gino.
Yes.
Pete.
Aye.
Susan.
Aye.
Michelle.
Yes.
Don.
Yes.
And I vote aye, so that passes unanimously. Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Sarah, who we saw briefly. And then please tell Todd we said thank you. All right, we're going to go ahead and move back to Christina for the updated salaried employee retirement plan funding policy. Hello again, Christina.
Hello again. So this evening, I will be asking for your adoption of the updated salaried employees retirement plan pension funding policy and the ATU Local 757 pension funding policy. These policy updates have been approved by their respective pension committees. And before I answer your questions about these changes and request your adoption, I will play a short presentation video summarizing the updates. And this video was provided to you and the community in advance of today's meeting. And unfortunately, it's not quite as cool as the LTD blue buses or really green one, but I hope it is still helpful.
Greetings, I'm Christina Hsu, the Director of Finance. At the September 21st board meeting, I will be bringing for your adoption two updated pension plan funding policies. One funding policy is for non-union employees hired on or before January 1st, 2012. And the other funding policy is for our union employees. This presentation is being sent in advance of the meeting to.
Camille, you want to give it a try?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Greetings. I will be bringing for your adoption two updated pension plan funding policies. One funding policy is for non-union employees hired on or before January 1st, 2012. And the other funding policy is for our union employees. This presentation is being sent in advance of the meeting to allow you and the public time to review the presentation at your leisure in advance of the board meeting. At the board meeting, I will play this video and answer your questions. As always, in all that we do, at the forefront of our minds are our mission, vision, and values. Financial policies in particular are an important way for us to ensure the district's continued financial health so that we can meet our mission to connect our community. The purpose of a pension plan funding policy is to provide a framework for both decision-making and meeting the pension plan obligations. The updates to the policy achieve this goal in two ways. First, clarifying the roles, responsibilities, and authority of the trustees, the LTD Board of Directors, and the advisors to the pension trusts. And number two, detailing how the pension benefit commitments will be achieved, including the decision-making process surrounding the financing of the pension plan obligations. These policies have been updated as part of the commitment made to the board last October to update a number of financial policies as part of our strategic business plan, financial health tactic. In the next slide, I will cover the updates made to the ATU pension and salary pension policies, which are the last of the five policies that I committed to develop as part of the reimagined strategy for board monitoring and influence on the district's financial health. The goal of the pension funding policy is not to change our current practice, but to provide clarity by formalizing the existing framework and to bring it into alignment with our strategic business plan objectives, and to ensure financial health of both the district and pension plans. Both the ATU and salary pension plans are trusts that hold assets and fund the benefits for non-represented employees hired on or before January 1st, 2012, and for all represented employees. Assets in these trusts can only be used for the exclusive benefit of the participants and beneficiaries. The updated pension funding policy clarified the roles and responsibilities of the board, the director of finance, and the trustees. The LTD board is responsible for maintaining the district's financial health while approving plan contributions that ensure that pension plan payment commitments are met. The trustees provide recommendations on policy and funding, but the board has sole discretion on pension plan funding decisions. The director of finance is responsible for ensuring that the board's funding direction is executed. My team also provides information to the third-party actuaries who make a recommendation for annual contributions to keep the pension plan healthy and on track to achieving a 100% funded state where the assets of the plan fully cover the obligations. The trustees hire the experts, such as actuaries, lawyers, and investment managers, and make decisions that impact the health of the plan and the actuarial funding recommendation. This includes things like assumptions around investment returns, amortization periods, or changes to investment asset allocations. The trustees also provide an advisory role to the board, providing their recommendations on contributions and policy updates. I would like to close by letting you know that the two updated pension funding policies have been reviewed by the pension trustees, which made a recommendation to the board to adopt these policies as presented during our August 16th Pension Trust Committee meeting. I look forward to seeing you at our next board meeting and answering all of your questions. Have a great day.
And here she is in person.
So we get to see it.
Well, thank you for making that video. We always appreciate that you do that. I know it takes time to get those done. What questions do you have for Christine?
Yes. Just a minor thing I've noticed in the literature that we rely on information from Kermit Stokes. Who is Kermit Stokes?
Yeah, Kermit Stokes are the administrators of our pension plan. So they help to, write the checks and things like that. So they administer, they're not advisory, they're actually administrators.
So they're hired by the district and they have other clients that.
Yes, and so what they do is they do the administration things, like they write the checks to the pension people who are in the pension. They help us to keep track of the district's, I guess, all of the pension funding that comes in. Okay. And they help us when we need to transfer money from one place to another. We will funnel it through current stuff.
Okay, thank you. And another detail, you just said in that presentation,
mm-hmm.
the funding would be approaching 100%, and I thought our goal was like 80% or something.
No, our goal is 100%. The current the ATU is currently funded at 81%, and the salaried is funded at 71%. But our goal is for the assets of the plan to equal what our liability is. So we wouldn't want to be short from 100%. Because then that means our assets aren't covering the liabilities that we have.
I know it was my understanding from before, perhaps confused understanding, was mm-hmm. that it wasn't efficient use of the funds to cover 100% that, the 80% usually did it. Or do you know what I'm talking about? Does that make any sense to what I'm saying?
So I don't know where that information came from, but what I can tell you is the district has a liability to all of the pension, the people who are in the pension plan. And we want to make sure that we're able to, especially in the salary plan, right, where people are going to, it's a closed plan. Mm-hmm. So therefore we need to make sure that we are able to cover all of those liabilities. The ATU plan is at least an open plan where people are continuing to contribute, but the goal is always to fund it to 100% of our liability.
Yeah, so I can help a little bit, I think, John. So most plans aren't immediately funded at 100%. right? They run around, you know, 80 or 85, and they're considered healthy plans. But ultimately, you're going to pay out 100% of the benefit for that plan in the long term. And that's the goal of the plan. So that's why you've got a 20-year plan to get it to 100%. And so, and we managed to that, so.
Yeah, it's my understanding before it was like at 60%, we were struggling to get it up to where it is. So
right.
It seems healthy where it is now, and it's getting better.
Well, I consider healthy when it 100%. Because I want to make sure that we are always able to meet our obligations. So that matters a lot to me, because these are people's retirement. And so from my perspective, anything short of 100% isn't there. But like Mark said, it's not like we're trying to get there tomorrow. We work with the actuaries, and we make sure that over the course of the 20 years, we're going to achieve the 100%. And for the salary plan, it's less than 20 years because the plan has been a closed plan. So therefore, we have to achieve it sooner than that.
Okay.
Other questions? There's no other questions. We do need to adopt this revised policy.
I move adoption of LTD resolution number 2022-09-21-053. It is hereby resolved that the LTD Board of Directors adopts the updated salary employees retirement plan funding policy as presented.
I'll second.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Let's go with Don. All right, let's do roll call vote. Don?
Aye.
Michelle?
Yes.
Susan?
Aye.
Pete?
Aye.
Gino?
Yes.
I vote aye, so that passes unanimously.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Christina. And it looks like you don't get to leave so fast because you are back up next for the updated LTD ATU Local 757 pension funding policy.
Do they have to adopt both? Do you have to adopt both of them, both the salaried one and the ATU one? So
yes, it's two separate resolutions for each plan. However, Christina's presentation covered both policies.
Okay, so we're ready to move with the second one. Okay. Thanks for setting me straight. I move adoption of LTD resolution number 2022-09-21-054. It is hereby resolved that the LTD Board of Directors adopts the updated amalgamated transit union employees retirement plan funding policy as presented.
Second.
There we go. All right, Gina?
Yes.
Pete?
Aye.
Susan?
Aye.
Michelle?
Yes.
Don?
Aye.
I vote aye, that passes unanimously. Thank you. That's why we call it ATU. It's so hard to say.
I know. I'm pretty happy I got that out without totally butchering it.
We're doing good things. All right. So great. I don't see Joe. Okay. Who is doing the West Eugene MX property transfer agreement?
That would be Joe.
I warned you guys earlier if you knew any good jokes, and that, like, have you been thinking about it? Well, sometime?
And let's see. On the
no. Oops. We can move that up.
Yeah, let's do the World Championship about today. We're waiting for Joe.
Does that work for you, Brett?
I can do that. Okay. I think I can maybe we'll figure it out. So anyway, we'll make it up as we go or call it something good. But anyway, thank you for the opportunity to share with you a little bit of a summary of the World Championships. As you guys know, in Eugene on July 15th through the 24th, the World Championships was here, commonly known as Oregon 22. This event was the first time this championship has actually happened in the United States, and we got to host that. So it brought over 1,700 athletes representing 179 countries with over 18 million viewers worldwide. So it was well represented here in Eugene, Oregon, alongside a larger transportation network coordinated and to support our community. LTD participated in the regional sense
in two basic areas, and I want to kind of talk about those two basic areas that we participated in. The first of those was we increased rapid bus transit service, or more commonly known around here as MX service. And we also extended our biking service. On the MX service, what we did is we, any period of time that the service was not running currently at 10-minute service, which is our normal operating frequency on Monday through Friday, we increased that service. So in the evenings, as the service begins to lessen and we go to 15-minute, 30-minute, et cetera, we actually added additional service. And then on weekends where we run a 15-minute service, we actually increased that to a 7 to 8 minute service frequency. We added 268 additional revenue hours on the MX line, and that was only from Springfield Station through the Franklin Corridor all the way to Eugene Station to help those who were coming and going from the event be able to connect more efficiently to our bigger regional network of the fixed route service. That resulted in a 22% increase for our weekday service, 47% on Saturdays, and 50% on Sundays as compared to a year ago. So that was kind of a big jump for the area with all that additional service. The second part of that first part that we did is we also increased our Sunday evening departures. So normally our last departure on Sunday is at 8:30 from Eugene Station. We added a 9:30 departure. And that was to coordinate with the event getting out, allowing people to be able to still access BRT, to access our fixed route system as a whole, so that they could, you know, go to places to eat afterwards, be able to get back to their motels, hotels, et cetera, and whatever other activities they might have planned within the region. That resulted in about 49 additional revenue hours that we did for the two Sundays that we ran that service. And we had about 300 additional boardings on that last final or that 9:30 trip on Sunday evening. System-wide, just taking a quick look at our entire system as a whole, that includes our MX as well, a fixed route, we showed an 11% increase on weekdays, 25% on Saturday, and a 35% increase overall for the duration of the 10 days of the event. The second area that we helped in the regional sense was kind of unique for us in some ways, because we were tasked by the governor's office to provide a airport to hotel service. Now, this is kind of outside of our normal fixed route, because this is actually a door-to-door service. And so we had to design this and come up with it. It was a moving target, as Cassette well knows. She was intricately involved. We actually didn't have a solid plan until almost literally 2 weeks before it had to launch. The target was continually moving daily, sometimes numerous times a day. So, but ultimately, LTD as a whole, as a team, they came together. It was quite amazing. Somehow we managed to do these things right up to the wire and make it happen. But I want to mentioned that this service was a supplemental service. It's really important to understand that we weren't intentionally trying to run the service 24/7. You know, we weren't trying to meet every single flight that came in or every single flight that went out. We were purposely trying to supplement the current resources that exist, such as our taxis and our Uber, Lyft, hotel shuttles, etc. So we focused on mostly just when flights were coming in at peak and when they were leaving the area peak. So our services were governed in those areas. The first part of the week, we focused mostly on just getting people from the hotel to airport, or from the airport to the hotels. The latter part of the week, we switched our service around a little bit and we focused more on getting people from the hotels to the airport. If you've flown out of Eugene, you understand that most of our flights go out really early, and most of our flights come in really late. So obviously we had to switch all of that around as we were doing that. Just a couple other things. We used 15 vehicles to do this. We used cutaway vehicles. We worked with our partners of TriMet as well as Chariots. to, they each contributed 5 cutaways that we brought down to the area, along with 5 ride source vehicles. And those 15 vehicles provided the service. Now, one of the things to keep in mind, we only focused on 2 basic zone areas. There just didn't have enough resources to focus on the entire community. There's just way too many motels, too many things to be able to hit them all. We focused on what we called zones. Zone 1 was Gateway and Valley River. And zone 2 was the downtown area. And then, of course, we ran those shuttles during those periods of time. We used 1,800 revenue hours to do this service over the course of 14 days. So the service actually started 2 days prior to the event and ended 2 days after the event. And the purpose of that, of course, was those who were early arrivals, who had other plans, activities, things that they wanted to work or do, or maybe just travel through the area and see some of the things that Eugene has to offer, as well as 2 days after. As you well know, obtaining flights, sometimes you've got to be a little flexible. So we wanted to make sure we gave riders that flexibility to be able to make those connections. I can't emphasize, I did earlier, how much it was a team effort. It really was. I still marvel at the idea of the shortened window that we had and how HR managed to pull together enough temporary workers to do the work. ATU operations who made opportunities for operators who were on their days off to be able to help out as well. It was truly a team effort. I mean, even facilities, they're out there putting up stops on my last minute, urgent, please go put this up now if you would, please, type thing. So there's just so many people involved, marketing. I felt sorry for them in some ways. It was like I gave it to them like a week before and said, here, can you make this happen? And they got it all out there somehow. So anyway, kudos to everything. I want to end with one little story from the event. We received a lot of great feedback from a lot of people, but this one was especially kind of cool. We got a call from CSC, and they had said that there was a group from Puerto Rico. There were 14 riders, and they were actually all in their 70s, had come out from Puerto Rico to see the event. And their experience getting here wasn't so good. As you well know, the air stuff and everything these days is quite challenging at best. And so they didn't have a great experience getting here, not because of LTD or our transportation network locally, just the process of getting here. And they needed to get back to the airport, and they wanted to know for sure that they could get there. And so we gave them the schedules, and they were actually staying at Motel 6, which was not in one of our pickup areas. And so they were actually going to, at like 3:00 in the morning, grab their luggage. And if you know where Motel 6 is, out on Gateway, far side off there, they were going to actually pack those things all the way down to the Quality Inn to the stop, which was a little bit of a hike. So the team kind of got together, operations, some of the people that were running the system, and said, let's send 2 buses over there. And they sent 2 buses over there at like 2 or 3 more in the morning, picked these 14 folks. So got them to the airport, got them out. They were ecstatic. In fact, we used one of our old retired guides that she did it, which is Gary Bennett. So he had a great time, and so it was a good experience overall. I guess I didn't tell you that I had 570 riders, I think, we gave during that event. So anyway, any questions?
And you lived to tell about it.
I know, isn't that exciting? It was a fun event, so. All right.
Yeah, Pete, go ahead.
Not a question. I'm just I'm impressed with the work that you did, and riding the system during that time was a breeze. So congratulations, you guys.
Good. That's awesome to hear. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for all the work, and please pass on our gratitude.
I will. There was a lot of people involved. Trust me.
So it's going to take a while. So, but just keep going around and say, Board of Directors says thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, there you go. Just wear a sign for the day. All right, Joe. You're fine. Are you ready?
Is Kristen? Okay, great.
Kristen Denmark, who's been providing legal counsel about this particular topic, is also online here. So we'll both be here to answer questions and give you some information. So I'm going to go ahead and give you a kind of a rundown. A lot of it's in your packet already, but I thought it'd be good to kind of just reiterate, since it's been such a long process on this particular project, I think I'm anticipating some questions. So during the West Eugene MX project development phase, which took place over multiple years, the board was provided information on the breadth, the scope, cost, and schedule. This information included tasks to comply with federal regulations and project oversight. One such task was drafting the real estate acquisition management plan, referred to as the RAMP, which serves as a guide for implementing the real estate requirements for the West Eugene project. It defines the roles and the responsibilities of the West Eugene property acquisition team, describes the acquisition process, and lists applicable federal, state, and local requirements. Resolution 2013-33 was adopted by the board back in December of 2013. I think Don might be the only one around from that point in time, but directing staff to go ahead and proceed with the property acquisition process. So in 2014, LTD began acquiring properties to expand its MX line to Southwest Eugene, primarily on 6th, 7th, 11th Avenues, and Garfield Street. LTD acquired permanent property interests, which became expanded roadway to accommodate dedicated MX lanes, sidewalks, ADA ramps, concrete fillets at cross sections, it's an engineering term, driveway aprons, and many other improvements. LTD plans to transfer ownership of right-of-way easements and property deeds acquired during the West Eugene project to the city of Eugene. As outlined in the RAMP, the property acquisition closeout phase includes transfer of all new right-of-way deeds and/or easements to the adjacent road authority. So per the local jurisdictions at the time, which was actually ODOT and the city of Eugene, we have 120 transactions and they would all need to be completed, certified, and then transferred over in a single batch. We just want to do one transaction with the road authorities. The city of Eugene is the sole road authority currently in the project area. LTD and city staff, along with the respective legal counsels, have completed reviews and drafted an agreement to transfer properties to city ownership. This is an action between both organizations and doesn't require any action by others, including current and past property owners within the project area. The transfer of property interest from LTD to the city of Eugene fulfills the closeout phase of the RAMP. LTD currently holds interest in certain public facilities that are required to be permanently owned and managed by the adjacent road authority. Facilities like sidewalks, pedestrian ramps, traffic lanes, those are all outside LTD's authority to permanently own and maintain. And with that preamble, I was going to turn it over to Kristen, and she can talk about the efforts with her counterpart at the city in terms of how they've been working on this agreement.
Kristen, we cannot hear you. Is there a different mic setting that you need to do?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, yeah. We can. Thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, so hi, everybody. Nice to see you all. I have been working with Joe and the city attorney's office for a while on these property transfer documents. As Joe mentioned, this is completing the final phase of the RAMP, which is the Real Estate Acquisition Management Plan. That was approved by the board in 2013, but it was also approved by FTA. So we have to comply with that plan. It was always contemplated that we would transfer these property interests to the city. So what's in your packet is an intergovernmental agreement that talks about transferring the property interest and the continuing control that LTD will have over any bus stations or any of our facilities that remain within those areas. But otherwise the underlying ground and the improvements like sidewalks will be transferred over to the city. And then attached to that IGA are the actual transfer documents, which will get recorded in deeds and records should you all approve this. So there's one document that will transfer the properties we acquired by deed and another that will assign the easements over to the city. And so we worked really extensively and hand in hand with the city, and they've approved of the documents that we are presenting to you all tonight. And we're just asking for the board to authorize the general manager to execute these property transfer documents to close out this final phase of the ramp.
So I have questions for Kristen or Joe. Can you just clarify, because in your department report, you talked about the fiber situation. Does LTD retain ownership of the fiber?
We do. Yeah. So part of the project, we installed fiber that ran the entire length of the corridor. And we do own that. We do maintain that. And we lease part of it to the city. And so that's what that agreement was about.
Yeah. Okay. So when you mentioned the underground, that's exclusive of the fiber.
Yeah, fiber is a separate agreement completely. So we've got a whole other
contract. They're not attached to
fiber.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, the sidewalks and those type of improvements. Okay. And the fiber is a separate agreement that we negotiated concurrently with the city attorney's office, separate from this agreement.
Got it. Okay. Questions? Okay, there's nothing, we can move forward with making a motion.
It's like I'm on a roll. I got it. I move adoption of LTD resolution number 2022-09-21-055. It is hereby resolved that the LTD Board of Directors approves the property transfer documents transferring the acquired property interest to the City of Eugene and authorizes the interim general manager to execute such documents.
Second.
All right. We'll do a vote. Gino?
Yes.
MP?
Aye.
Susan?
Aye.
Michelle?
Yes.
Don?
Yes.
I vote aye, so that passes unanimously. Thanks, Joe. Kristen, nice to see you. Thank you for being here this evening.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, you have so much going on. Yeah, marketing always has a very robust one, Kat, so thank you for all the good reading in the department reports. Operations, awesome update this month, but yeah, thanks, Joe. Teaching us all sorts of things. We appreciate it. Okay. So with that, do any of the board of directors have questions about the written reports that I just rambled off? Okay. So let's move on to our last two agenda items before we move into executive session. So the December board meeting falls on December 21st, and I wanted to see if this board is amenable to moving that to December 14th, so we're not meeting kind of around Christmas time. So we would have our work session on the 7th and then board meeting on the 14th. Can I just hear from folks if that would work for your schedule? Thumbs up from Gino, thumbs up from Pete, thumbs up from Michelle. Don, Susan, remember we have a hybrid option.
I'll be in the house.
Okay. Are you comfortable tuning in virtually if that works for your schedule during that time?
I don't think it would.
No. Okay. All right. Well, we have our feedback from our board of directors, so we can go back and talk about what we want to do. Sound fair? Okay.
Are you gone both the 7th and 14th?
Yeah.
Okay.
From the 30th to the 15th.
Okay.
And just so I'm clear, the items for action information at future meeting, this was requested by the board. This is your opportunity to weigh in on what we have upcoming to our October, November, December board meetings. The topics are what's on the agenda are listed in your packet. Is there anything else at this time that you would like to see?
The first meeting that the new board members will be attending?
The board member that's filling Emily's vacancy will be next month.
Oh, okay.
And then it won't be until January for the other two.
Thank you.
And Kelly will be at the budget committee meeting October 5th, mm-hmm. but she will miss the
right. board. Right. And that budget committee meeting is now will be here. Okay. Anything else before we move into executive session? So we're going to have a fun December board meeting because it's Dawn and I's last one. So we're going to have cookies, solar panels, who knows? That'll be fun. All right. Lane Transit District Board of Directors will now meet in executive non-public session pursuant to ORS 192.662D to conduct deliberations with persons designated by the governing body to carry on labor negotiations. At the conclusion of the executive session, the meeting will adjourn. Representatives of the news media and only designated staff shall be allowed to attend the executive session. All other members of the audience are asked to leave the room. Representatives of the news media are specifically directed not to report on any of the deliberations during the executive sessions, except to state the general subject of the sessions as previously announced. No decision may be made in executive session. The executive session is expected to last approximately 20 minutes. The meeting will adjourn at the conclusion of the executive session, will not return to public session. Okay, I would like a motion to move into executive session.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Do I need a roll call vote for this or we just move in? Oh, okay, cool. All right, so I am going to officially call the executive session to order. It is 6:00.